However the industry has changed over the last decade, there are very few artists that make a career in playing original music without signing with a record label. In this little spiel, I'll cover the basics. Number one, who are the record companies? Number two, who are A&R people? Three, what are record companies looking for? And four, how do you get your music heard by a record company? So firstly, who are the record companies? One thing that always surprises me is the amount of people that have dreams of being a major musical act and yet cannot name any of the labels. I'm constantly amazed at musicians who would not be able to tell me whether there were three record companies or 300. I've had people who tell me they've dreamed all their life of being a major international music star, but don't have a clue about the actual process of getting there. You can't rely on talent alone. You really have to have a decent business head as well, because ultimately you're asking a label to do a very sizable business deal with you, and you are the product. You could say that it is more artistic to just do the music and forget about the corporate stuff, but the simple fact is the labels still hold the keys to the castle. Which really sucks, but it's a reality. So the first thing you need to know is who the labels are. There are four international major labels, all with an active Australian roster. These are 1. Sony, formerly Sony BMG, formerly CBS. Number 2, Warner, part of the Time Warner Group, second biggest entertainment company in the world, after Disney. Incidentally, Disney has become a major music label in the US, but they do not have an Australian talent scout. I've had a couple of artists go to the US and get scouted by Disney, and for a certain kind of music, teeny poppy stuff, there really is no better label in the world. Number 3, Universal. They swallowed up a lot of different labels to become massive, and for example, PolyGram was one of the labels that they acquired. Number 4, EMI, a label that has its roots in the UK and was more or less built on the success of the Beatles. In Australia, there are also a number of significant independent labels. There's no fundamental difference between the way majors and independents operate. Independent means basically not one of the four I've just mentioned, and it doesn't mean that they do indie music exclusively. Some independents do dance, some do R&B, some cheesy pop. Often these independents distribute their product through the major labels, meaning the major handles getting the product into the record shops. And often they'll handle the marketing and promotion of the record too. But the signing and development of the artist is done by the independent. Okay, so a few independent Australian record labels worth mentioning, and this information will date. Number 1, Liberation. This is a label created by Michael Gudinski, who was the guy originally behind Mushroom Records. Number 2, Modular. They've recently had success with Wolfmother, Lady Hawk, The Presets and others. Number 3, Due Process, a label that got started with Powderfinger and has gone on to sign The Greats, Living End, Jebediah and others. Number 4 is 11 Music, a label started by John Watson, manager of Silverchair, Missy Higgins, among others. Now, there are plenty of others, but it's hard to talk about independents and keep it current, because many of them pop up and disappear just as quickly. Many of them also have artists that you probably haven't heard of, and some are really just glamour projects for individual artists. The most important thing to know is that you can have success on either a major label or an independent label. Both have strengths and weaknesses. For example, a major label may have lots of money to spend, but they may be spreading it between 20 artists. And unless you're on top of the priority tree, you might be losing out. If you're lower on that tree, you might see all the resources go to the highest profile artists, while you struggle to maintain the attention of the label staff. Now, sometimes major labels sign artists and gradually forget about them. This is a whole other discussion in itself, but the take-home point is that signing with a major is not an automatic guarantee of fame and fortune. However, getting in with the right major and signing the right deal can open the door to what I call the big machine of publicity. Videos, radio play, magazine covers, the works. An independent label might be more budget conscious, but they may lavish more attention on you and might be a lot more passionate about getting your particular music out there. They might understand your market a whole lot better and be spending a smaller amount of money but in a smarter way. They might also not interfere with your music and look as much as a major is likely to. Now, this is a generalization, but it's one that I've found to be true a lot of the time. This has to be weighted against the fact that they might not have the marketing spend to compete against the majors at the very top end of the spectrum. Anyway, that's a quick introduction to who the labels actually are. Okay, the second thing. Who or what are A&R people? Each label has an A&R rep who is responsible for finding local talent and bringing it to the label. Major labels sometimes have as many as three A&Rs. A&R stands for Artist and Repertoire, which dates back to the time when A&R guys found songs for singers to record. They still fulfill this role for some artists, but for the most part, they guide the signing and development of the artists signed to the roster. This is done in conjunction with the manager, which often leads to a major tussle for control of the project. It's usually up to the manager to hassle the crap out of the A&R guy to make sure that their artist is being looked after properly and being given enough attention. But that's another story. A&R is a bit of a black art, and there definitely isn't any course or any particular training you can do for the job. In general, A&R people get the job because the powers that be at the label think that they have good ears. They may come from management, publicity, media, or occasionally the studio side. Some of the major A&R guys in the States were producers first, and we're starting to see that in Australia a little bit too, which I like. They get the job because they've demonstrated somewhere, somehow, that they can spot talent that will connect with a large audience. They also have a network of producers, managers, radio people, venues, etc. that can give them tips on who's good. I've met a wide variety of A&R people in the last 12 years, the 12 years that I've been part of the industry. Now, some are very mathematical and rational, studying the charts and sales figures. Others are real hipsters that think kind of as little as possible about the business side of things. Either approach can work or fail miserably. There's a lot of guesswork involved and a lot of pure intuition and just a lot of luck. But at the end of the day, the record company boss takes stock of all the decisions made by the A&R person, what was spent, how much was sold, and decides to keep them on or fire them. These are the most precarious jobs in the music business, and also some of the most glamorous. You can pretty much swan around giving your opinion on this band and that band, spending someone else's money to make your musical dreams come true. But if the big hits don't come, the hits that pay for all the quote-unquote cool bands that you signed, you're out. And you often can't get back in. You get a year, maybe two, to prove you've got the goods. And if you're deemed to not have the goods, whether it's your fault or not, you're kind of cast out of the industry. The industry is littered with the corpses of previous A&R guys and gals, trying to stay in the business one way or another after their moment has passed. Most of them end up starting consultancy businesses. There are also A&R guys that have had one massive hit for the label 5 years ago, and almost nothing since. But one monster hit can see you through. The thing is, as sales have diminished over the last 5-10 years, this is becoming rarer, and record companies are expecting more consistency from their A&R people. Now, I like most of the A&R guys I've met. They're always genuine music fans, and they really do believe in what they sign. Their taste doesn't always align with mine, and they don't always praise everything I bring them, but for the most part, they're good people with good intentions. Unfortunately, the business itself is very competitive and cutthroat, which often forces them into decisions they'd rather not take, like signing a one-dimensional starlet or dropping their favourite band in the world because of low sales. Okay, on to point number three. What are record companies, and more specifically, A&R guys looking for? Now, when I say A&R guys, please bear in mind there are A&R girls too. It's just a general term. Now, there's no simple answer to the question, what are they looking for? But if there was a simple answer, it would be profitable musical acts. That is, bands and solo artists who will return more to the record company in sales than all of the other expenses involved. Recording, videos, tour support, staff costs, the works. Now, musicians often bitch about how record companies are heartless and lack artistic vision, etc. That's fine, but in the end, record companies are not charities. They're not government-funded like the ABC. They're not there to serve the musical community and foster artistic development. They only exist to make a profit. They're businesses who could take their millions of dollars and invest it in making chocolate bars if they thought it would make them more money. Now, that's a cold analysis, but it puts things back in perspective. The smaller independents tend to be a little bit less driven by the accountants, but when it's all said and done, they have to earn a living from music. Very few people, especially in Australia, are rich or vain enough to just put out records for fun and actually pay for the privilege of doing it. So you have to keep this in mind first and foremost. For a label to invest in you and make you more famous than Lady Gaga and U2 combined, they have to strongly believe that there will be a path to making a profit. And these days they expect that path to be shorter. In the early days of the music business, labels would try to grow an artist over the course of two or three albums, expecting the third or fourth to pay off big time. Now, this was the case with INXS, AC/DC, and plenty more. In the current environment, labels want to do well first time out, making a clear profit or at least break even. They tend to wash their hands of anything that isn't doing well straight away, which makes it harder. It's becoming quite regular for artists to be dropped after a first or second single, but it kind of highlights how nervy the labels have become about losing money. In terms of what kind of music they're looking for, well, it's a moving target. Although the cynics out there would say that labels just tend to sign copies of something that's already successful, I haven't really seen that to be true. Of course, there are waves of genres that come through, for example, the new metal phase of the early 2000s. And yes, labels did sign a bunch of acts like Linkin Park, Korn, etc. that didn't turn out to be anything more significant than half-baked versions of the successful acts. But at the time, there was a strong audience for that kind of music. So there was a decent reason to sign a band in that genre. Now, that audience has moved on to other things, perhaps heavier music or hardcore music, or perhaps they've grown up and mellowed right out. For whatever reason, that scene has had its moment, and as a result, labels don't sign bands like that anymore. It's quite simple, really. You do have to consider whether the music you're making is past its use-by date, or more likely, if the way you are playing it and recording it is starting to sound a little bit crusty. A song can be treated 20 different ways, and the trick is to find a way to play the song that fits with where music is right now, or better yet, where music is headed. This is a major thing I have to deal with as a producer. The song and artist might be great, but the way the song is being presented is dated. If you're paying any attention to what's being signed, what's being played on the radio, and which bands are the hype bands, it will be pretty obvious when all of your influences come from 5 years ago. Now, you can't obsessively chase musical fashion, it'll drive you crazy. But in the same way you might change your clothes and hairstyle once in a while, you need to consider your musical taste and the way you present your songs, and how it relates to where the business is up to. This is where a producer can come in very handy, and often it will be up to the producer to lead your material into more interesting and current territory. Of course, there are dozens of genres happening all at once, but you have to pay attention to where your particular scene is going, whether it be rock, dance, country, punk, whatever. It's often a question of updating your music collection and realizing, oh, that's how songs like mine are being treated right now. It's well and good to listen to your favorite records from 2004 over and over, but it won't help you. If anything, you're better off listening to records from 1984 and being inspired by that. It's fine to be ultra-modern and fine to be retro, but it's really good to be 5 or 8 years out of date, which describes a lot of what I hear out there in unsigned world. People start playing in their teen years and keep playing the same music into their early 20s. Sometimes they get enough response to keep playing that same style until their early 30s. Now, if you keep playing it long enough, it might come back into fashion, but you'll probably be too old by then. Some music doesn't date as quickly, like straight-up guitar rock, you know, Foo Fighters, for example. But from year to year, there'll be subtle differences in the production, lyric choices, chord progressions. And A&R guys are pretty keenly aware of this. They're probably more obsessed than anyone with what's hip and what's dated. So if you want to be on their radar, you have to be at least thinking about it. Some people think they can rebel against this idea and think, for example, that if, you know, Coldplay in 2003 was good enough for millions of people, then it should be just as good now. That may be the case, but the gatekeepers of the industry don't think so, and you have to get past their gates before you can connect with those millions of people. Ideally, you want a sound that is evolving past what is happening right now. Again, this is tricky, and sometimes you're better off writing all the songs you can than coming to a producer who is constantly connected with the world of what's being signed and what's about to be signed. Not all producers are interested in that side of things. Some just like to make the music in their studio and kind of block out what's happening in the industry. I don't approach it like that. I feel it's part of my job to get the music that I record out there into the wider world. Part of my job is helping bands and singers choose material that will fit with what's on radio now, what's being signed, and then choosing how to produce and arrange that material. I mean, in the same way you don't need to know everything about hair in order to get a great haircut, you don't need to know everything about the best way to produce your song in order to see a good producer. So, assuming you've got something the labels might be interested in, the next question, and point four, is how do you get your music heard by the labels? Well, the first thing to know is that labels don't usually like to sign anything which is right at square one. So what's square one? Okay, for example, if you're a band without a decent recording, without any supports under your belt, with about 20 real fans, or you're a singer-songwriter who has plenty of songs written on acoustic guitar, none recorded really properly, and one low-key gig a week in front of a dinner crowd where you play mostly covers, that's square one. You might be amazing, but there is very little evidence from the label's point of view that anything is really happening for you. It's going to be up to them to do absolutely everything, which is hard, risky, and expensive. Now, of course, I come from the studio end of things, but I really feel like step one for any artist with decent songs is to make a recording of those songs, and a serious, well-produced and well-thought-out recording. That costs money, but if you're asking someone to eventually put in $200,000, you might need to spend a few thousand yourself. These days, you can't really ask people to imagine how good your song is going to sound when it has the studio treatment finally lavished on it. You pretty much have to make the recording. It's like telling somebody you'll be a super hottie when you get your hair cut and put your stage clothes on, and showing up in your pajamas with your bed hair. You better look pretty amazing in your pajamas, especially when the competition will be made up perfectly and looking three times as good as they ever could naturally. Anyway, I've taken that analogy far enough. Simple point is, you can't ask people to imagine it. You have to give it to them on a platter, because other people are going to. And in this industry, you need every shortcut, every advantage you can get. It is competitive because there are not unlimited places. In fact, there are a very limited number of opportunities. At a bare minimum, the market of unsigned musicians that labels are looking at are the artists with decent recordings. There has to be at least one great song recorded to a high level that they can show around the label, and sometimes even take to radio people in advance and ask them, "Would you play this act?" On top of that, labels generally want to look to their network of people before they deal direct with the artist. There are enough managers, agents, and producers around to serve as a kind of filter. The thinking generally goes that if there's something good out there, someone who knows the industry will come across it. It's rare that an extremely signable act is completely unknown to anyone in the industry. If they have been to a decent producer, he will know how good they are. If they've been getting plenty of gigs, venues will know about it, and local managers will start to take notice. If they have been getting a little bit of radio play, someone at the radio station will already know about it. So a simple answer to the question, how do you get heard by a record company, is to be heard by as much of the industry as possible before worrying about record companies. Create as much of a buzz as you can in whichever way you can before going to record companies. The ideal way is to be introduced by a third party. It just makes you that much more desirable. This has always been my approach. If I introduce the artist, the label is likely to see them as more qualified. They know I've been working in the industry for 10 plus years and wouldn't waste their time with something that had no chance of ever being signed. This doesn't mean they sign everything I bring them, but they'll give it a fair listen. If they like what they hear, the question will always be, "So what's the story with this?" Meaning, is there any buzz around the act? Creating a buzz comes from playing the best, most high-profile gigs you can get, getting radio play, getting a manager on board, getting press, getting your online presence up to scratch with as many fans as you can. And I believe in the current internet-driven music market, having a decent recording tends to be the first step in just about all of that. One great song, properly recorded that fits with what's happening right now, or better yet, anticipates what's about to happen, will be noticed and will lead to small things that will lead to bigger things that will certainly get the attention of labels. And if they approach you, there's no better position to be in. Now that's a basic overview, and every artist I work with needs a slightly different approach. But if you'd like to know more about what I do, or if you'd like some advice on where you're up to and where you should be headed, please get in touch. Thanks.